What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. This week, I'm here with Pedro and Scott. What's up, guys?
Well, let me start with saying hello.
Go.
You know, it's always nice. I'm glad you're very polite. You're welcome. Pedro, I'm waiting for you to thank me, but that's okay. We can do it next time.
Scott, thoughts on the Oscars?
I thought it was great overall. It was actually, I think, one of the first Academy Awards in a long time that it actually ended on time. But what maybe you didn't actually realize that it started 5 minutes late because there were protests down the street, which led to celebrities and attendees having to walk on with their own feet to the venue and get out of their cars.
Wait, it started 5 minutes late? I thought it started an hour early.
Yes, it was supposed to start at 7 p.m. Eastern, but it actually started at 7:05 p.m. Eastern.
Interesting.
So
I didn't notice that. I got in at about 7:05.
Yes. So, all right, maybe there wasn't a protest. They started it so you were able to see the top of the show, probably. But I think it's more about the protest.
The early start time works. They need to keep it like that.
I didn't love it.
You thought it was too late? It was too early?
Too late.
Too early?
No, I thought I was just getting cozy for the 8 o'clock. And then my wife is like, I think it starts at 7. And I was on Twitter trying to find out like who's broadcasting it, what channel is going to be on.
And then I saw it's
starting right now. And then I tune in and yeah, like Jimmy Kimmel is like starting to walk on stage. I'm like, oh wait, I thought I had another hour to play like Helldivers or something, but I didn't. But it was good because it ended at a reasonable time.
Yes, it ended. It ended on time at 10:30. But I'm very surprised. It's hard to tell when people do not know when it's on and what channel it's on, because it's been on the same channel for ABC for years, probably 20 or 30 years. But it's the difference between people who don't watch regular television to see the promos, and it's like, oh, the Oscars are on. I have to figure out where to find it. And that's where those articles that are posted whenever there's an event, it definitely helps to try to figure out how to watch it if you're not really fully paying attention.
Yeah, because I often will watch, I like to watch the Emmys too, and that's probably a different channel. And my wife likes to watch the Grammys, and that's probably different. So,
CBS, yeah. Those articles come in handy. Where can I watch this?
I haven't watched any award shows in a couple years, but I thought this one was pretty cool. From what I remember them, it was pretty good, and I've been reading online that a lot of people are saying this is like the best Academy show in a few years. Do you think this one was better than the last couple ones, Scott?
I think last year's was better. I don't remember why, but it stood out more. But I think that Jimmy Kimmel and his team of writers really tried to see how can we raise the bar. Like the intros are so good. Like no one thought that John Cena was going to walk onto the stage looking like he was nude, and then he wound up doing it, but when you read it to it, he was wearing something, so it really wasn't nude, but you know, it looked like he was. But when people are, you know, get surprised about like Emma Stone won for best actress, and you see her being funny, like being nervous that her dress was falling apart, and blamed it on Just Ken performance, which I myself think of like want to see things more serious as far as performances at the Oscars. So I wasn't too much of a fan of the I'm Just Ken performance, but I know it was very well received.
I thought it was a funny moment, something different. They switched it up, you know. And this one all around, like I think the show just had like a feel good to it. It wasn't taking itself too seriously, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it felt fun. It actually felt fun.
Yeah, I think that's in part because the people in attendance, the A-listers, the celebrities, they look like they were having fun. So when they project like they're having fun, it makes it feel like a more fun show.
Kind of felt like it had a younger vibe to it too, right?
It did, yeah, because they focused on like the more current celebrities like Emma Stone, Emily Blunt. I'm blanking on it, literally everybody else. But I feel like...
So new generation of actors were very present in this one.
And I think for me, what stood out the most was the arrival. And I know these people, they always arrive very late, but the mainstream arrival of Christopher Nolan and Yorgos Lanthimos. Like, those guys officially arrived to mainstream audiences. When they drop a film next time, it's going to be a big deal. Like, maybe Nolan was one movie or two ahead of him, of Yorgos, but Yorgos is on that level now, too.
I found it funny in the very beginning when Jimmy Kimmel, and when people stood up, only half the crowd, and he thanks, he's like, thanks for the half-standing ovation. And then just goes right, gets right into his monologue. It's like half the people in the audience stood up, and you can clearly see.
It's all his friends. Hasn't Nolan won a bunch of times before, though? Why am I thinking that he's like won like already like two or three times before?
I'm not sure that he has. Scott,
it seems like every time he makes a movie, it's nominated for best movie.
It is. I'm not talking about his achievement. I'm talking about his mainstream perception. Like, I feel like he's become so identifiable. And that's in part because the movie was very hyped, but then all of the press around the film, and, you know, he did a great segment with Stephen Colbert. So I just feel like his name became a really big brand this year.
He's definitely, like, the top. I would say he's probably the top. He's like what Spielberg was in like the 80s or something, right? Now.
Yeah, and to that point, we're not really focused on Scorsese or Spielberg. Like, they were at the show, but they were pretty quiet throughout. Spielberg wasn't nominated, but, you know, they cut to him a few times. But I think it was like officially like these new directors are being recognized. And it takes a long time for a director to be recognized because you have to do great work for a long period of time. So it's very tough.
Yeah. You gotta make like two or three good movies. I feel like nobody wins their first time nominated, you know?
Nobody wins. I think Nolan did win or was nominated for original screenplay for Memento, but I'm not sure if he's won any Oscars for directing.
So I believe for Academy, I believe for Memento, he was... nominated for Best Original Screenplay. He was nominated for Best Original Screenplay for Inception and Best Picture.
Just give us the wins. What did he do? Has he won?
The only time he won was for Oppenheimer.
Okay, so, yeah.
And that's for...
That was his only best... Director that was best his only picture. Best director?
That was his only win.
Only one. That was his only win for the Academy Awards.
He's never had best film?
It's tough out there, bro.
Scott's doubting his sources. No. I'm like, let's give Pedro a moment to let that sink in.
Maybe it's just that he's been nominated so much that in my head I'm thinking he's won so much. But that was his first for best film or best director?
Scott, I mean, I don't have it. I can pull it up real quick, but I don't have
Yes. I've even seen an article from The Guardian saying that the headline is Christopher Nolan wins his first ever Oscar for directing. That was the headline for the article from The Guardian.
So Scorsese has also... Okay. Yeah, he's won one. Scorsese has also just won one Oscar for The Departed. It's hard because it's not about the body of work. It's about the hot film that year.
Also, I think Robert Downey Jr. won his first, right? Is that what they said?
No, I think that was his second. I believe he's won an Oscar before.
Because I could have sworn they said it was like his first win.
Well, yeah, I guess Nolan technically won 2 Oscars. He won as a producer for Best Picture, and he won as director for the same film. And I think they mentioned Robert Downey Jr. I thought on the broadcast they mentioned that was his 2nd Oscar. But I'm not certain. I'm asking ChatGPT. But what else did you guys like about the show?
I mean, Scott, since you watch more of these, were there any, like, real surprises that you found?
Yes.
That you found surprising? Like, was there anyone that didn't win anything that people thought were going to win? Because I feel like there's not much difference between the Oscars and the, you know, Golden Globes or the Emmys or SAG. Like, leading up to it, it's kind of like just a repeat of stuff around the awards season. But was there any, like, surprises?
There's a lot of overlap.
Yeah,
the only surprise I think was Emma Stone winning over.
Yes, Emma Stone was
from Killers.
Emma Stone was a surprise. I think of having Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito walking out at the same time was a surprise. They were surprise presenters.
Why was Emma Stone winning a surprise? Didn't she win the last one that was out, the Emmy or the SAG?
Yeah, it was a surprise because the Oscars is the last show on the last award show, and prior to that, it was kind of back and forth between her and the actress from Killers of the Flower Moon.
So they had everyone split one and one.
They kind of were going back and forth, so people were expecting the actors from Killers to win, and Emma won.
Oh, okay.
Right. That's correct.
I mean, I thought the awards were whatever. I'm just here for the show. I'm rarely ever surprised, I guess. I kind of assumed that Killers of the Flower Moon wasn't going to win anything, and that Maestro wasn't going to win anything, just because they were like prestigious films, but they didn't really just hit with audiences the same way as these other ones did.
Did either of those win anything at all?
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
Maestro was just basically mentioned. It really didn't win anything.
A lot of foreign films won. A lot of the foreign films took home awards, which is, I guess, unusual, but commonplace. Now, Godzilla Minus One won Best Visual Effects. I thought that was cool. Those guys were so hyped up on stage.
Yeah, they were so happy. That was so
good.
The biggest difficult thing they had to do was figure out, how do we hold this character and the speech and the award at the same time? That was something they had juggled out to figure that out. And then they didn't get the hint that they needed to get off the stage because they were talking too long and it wasn't that big of an award. It's like, next!
It was for them. I mean...
Oh, of course it was.
I think that was Japan's first... If I'm right, that was Japan's first Academy Award.
Ukraine won their first...
Best documentary, yeah.
Best documentary, yeah.
Yeah. Man,
There were a lot of firsts, right? There were a couple firsts.
There were a few, yeah. That documentary, I remember watching those nominees and the short doc, and I was like, man, this is all like the saddest thing. Like, did anybody watch these? Like, it's just like all sad, really sad stories.
Someone watched it because they had to watch it to nominate it, but yes. It's more often than not that documentary did about negative stories than positive ones.
Yeah, I think that was the most serious part of the award show was that and the in memoriam section. Other than that, it felt like a pretty feel good show.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear about how a lot of people were upset about the in memoriam section because there were some people left out? Some people got upset that they were like focusing more on the performance instead of the actual people that passed away. Some people just got thrown in as like a paragraph of names at the end and weren't individually recognized. Yeah, Suzanne Somers was one. The guy from Rocky.
He was there.
Well, I think.
Which guy?
He passed away.
I know who you're talking about, but the boxer, right? He, from Rocky 1 and 2, and I guess 3 and 4 as well.
No, not the boxer. His Rocky's friend, the old guy with like the cigar smoker.
He didn't get a shout out?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Suzanne Somers, I guess she's a TV star, and she does infomercials. She's not part of the Oscars.
But she's done film work. But
Lance, you mentioned that, yeah, the Emmys.
Lance Reddick, who was in The Wire and a couple of shows, he wasn't mentioned either. He was just in a movie last year, John Wick 4.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. And they also say Angus Cloud. Yeah, but Angus Cloud, again, he's a TV actor. Yeah, I don't know how to make these decisions.
A couple people got left out, so some people were upset at that.
I think that the first decision is how you show it on screen. Because the In Memoriam can be a very controversial segment of the show. Because you can very easily overdo it. And the best way to present it is to not overdo it. Just put the names of the people on screen with photos and video clips of monumental people doing scenes.
What can they do?
They didn't do that. They were showing a camera, a steady cam from the audience, showing the images on a screen at the stage. So depending on how large your TV is, the size of the text was like size 8, and it was hard to tell who it was because it was so far away. There was even a time where they had 5 photos of people at once, and it was up for 3 seconds. On top of having dancers and musicians all at the same time. There were dancers.
They performed a beautiful song. I don't know that song, but it's like a classic Italian.
The song was, I mean, at the beginning there were dancers, but...
Oh, yeah, it was like some kind of like ballet thing. Yeah, I'm okay with that. I thought it was fine. I mean, look, can't please everybody.
I just say full screen it. You don't need all this stuff. Full screen it.
I thought it was fine. Play out. If they're omitting certain people, which it appears they are, I'm not offended. I don't know what's right or wrong here, but I'm just curious why those decisions were made. Maybe they think they're TV stars. I don't know.
It's the toss-up. Well, they had Tina Turner, but Tina Turner is, you know, known for
being
a music artist.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I don't have an answer.
There's the toss-up of who are they producing the Academy Awards for? Are they doing it for the people in the industry, or are they doing it for an audience that's watching as fans? Because the In Memoriam used to be a long segment, but they reduced the duration of it, which then causes them to have to eliminate people, because they used to have almost everyone. But then it leads to people going, this person was missed, this person is missed, and it turns into a whole thing. And then we hopefully move on after 3 days.
Everybody's going to be fine. I have no doubt. I see the guy from Rocky that passed away. That's his uncle.
Yeah, that guy, yeah.
He passed away. I didn't know this other dude passed away. He's young. I don't know his name, but I've definitely seen him. He's one of those guys. I don't know his name, but I've definitely seen him. But, all right.
So it was Robert Downey Jr.'s first Oscar win.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking.
He was hyped.
I remember they said that, and I was like, what, really? I could have sworn he had one for, like, one of the Marvel movies or something.
Hell no, those were never nominated. That was just, like, a 10-year gap in his career, basically. I mean, he actually said it during his speech. He's like, I think he thanked, I don't know who he thanked, maybe it was Nolan himself. He's like, thank you for putting me on this movie because, you know, I needed this role more than the role needed me.
He hadn't done a serious role in like a while, right?
He did a movie about where he played like a judge or the son of a judge. It was well regarded, but it didn't really get any viewership whatsoever. But it takes a while to come out of that kind of Marvel space and be reconsidered, be introduced as an actor. But I think him and Mark Ruffalo both were able to get out of that.
Another funny moment of the Oscars, that Divine Joy Randolph, when she won her award, she thanks her publicist. She says, "I want to thank my publicist," but then doesn't mention the name of her publicist.
Jimmy gave her
an opportunity. No one heard what she said because she wasn't mic'd. She was in the audience. She's like, "You thanked your publicist, but never mentioned her name." She starts like saying, talking to the camera, and no one heard her.
I think that was my favorite moment. Like she was super genuine, and yes. She's like, "They told me not to thank the publicist, but I'm gonna do it."
But I'm not gonna mention her. But then I'm not gonna mention their name. So I'm sure the publicist was laughing. Like, I guess I need to do a better job of teaching you how to do publicity.
I kind of felt bad for Bradley Cooper, right? Anybody else? I feel like this is like the biggest thing he's ever gonna do, and he didn't win anything for it, right?
I don't think the movie was at the level of getting an award. I think he put a lot.
I can't see him like writing and directing like and one upping what he did with this. So if he didn't win for this, that might be it for that guy. He's pretty impressive with his body of work, I must say. Like, he started off doing comedies that when he first came on the scene or like got popular, and then it's like, well, we didn't know he could write and direct and do all this other stuff. So
yeah, maybe we'll do an episode on his career a little bit. I'm curious to explore that, because as you say that, I was introduced to him through the Hangover series.
Yeah, me too.
But then remember he did like a couple of like really low grade action movies, like high concept but like poor quality. One was like he played a guy who takes a pill that makes his brain work like 10 faster.
Yeah, that was a cool movie. That was like a sci-fi.
Yeah, a sci-fi movie. A couple like that. And then he did Silver Linings Playbook, which he was great in. He did a couple other movies with that same director. He's had a weird career, but it'd be interesting to explore.
You know, he's putting in work, and like, I don't see how he can do. I mean, he's probably can, but I'm just saying, like, you know, this was a big thing. This was a big film for him, and A Star Is Born was big too, and so was what was that movie you mentioned, Bruno? Not the Notebook, the one with
Wait, which one? The one with
what's her name?
Jennifer Lawrence, Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah. That was big too. He didn't win for that. Like, those are three big movies that any other, you know, could be nominated at any year.
You know what you should watch, Bradley Cooper? I recommend American Sniper. That is a nice.
Yes, that's another
one. When did that come out? Was that like a mid 2000s movie?
20 teens, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. I remember. I saw that. I saw that a long time.
2014. That's 10 years old.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw that in the movie theaters. I don't remember it being...
It's an Eastwood film. It's really good.
Yeah.
But it's like low-key. You look at his body of work and like, oh yeah, he did some fire work. Oscar, you know, it's tough out there. He's got time. He's got plenty of time.
All right, should we move on to...
What's the topic, Pedro?
One of our next two movies, which is either Poor Things or Spaceman with Adam Sandler.
You guys want to start off Poor Things? So we all saw this on Hulu. I found out in the pre-production call that Scott had watched this thing back in the day. He never said anything. He watched it when it came out.
I don't say everything I watch. If we do, we would spend a lot of time laughing. But
You actually saw it in theaters, Scott?
No, well, I watched, kind of. I watched it, and I thought it was...
He got the screener.
Kind of. I watched it, and it was quite odd, but it was hard to not continue watching because it was so well shot, even though there were parts that were difficult to watch.
Which ones?
What?
Well, like what 80, like 89% of the movie was like graphic sex.
Yeah, and
I didn't think it needed all that. Like, you kind of got your point, you know.
Well, it wasn't. That was trying to draw attention to it. Yes.
I mean, other than that, I don't know what was hard to watch, but I just thought
the surgical parts to it.
Oh, the like slightly gory parts. So,
yeah. But the sexual things, that was just. It wasn't that graphic. Just thinking
about
it.
I thought it was overdone and like, you know, okay, we understand she found her sexuality, but like after the first two scenes, you didn't have to keep showing it and showing it and showing it.
Well, the point was just to make you feel uncomfortable because the situation was uncomfortable.
I took it differently. So, we don't need to focus on the whole sex thing right now. I think there's so much more to the film, but we can talk about that. I was really looking forward to this movie when I first saw the trailer. I didn't get a chance to see it in theaters, but Pedro, he shouted out that it was coming to Hulu or was on Hulu, and my wife and I watched it Friday night or Saturday night. So my expectations were high because I had seen... I don't want to say I'm a big fan of the director Yorgos, but The Lobster is one of my favorite modern movies. I've seen it a handful of times. I went to see The Favorite in theaters when that came out a couple of years ago, also with Emma Stone. So I wanted to see what this guy was going to do next because the movie just seems so far out there visually, like there's nothing else like it. And I'm a huge fan of Emma Stone. I just think she takes risks that most actresses wouldn't take, and this role is evidence of that. I thought the movie was fantastic. I'm not a huge fan of 2-plus-hour-long films, but I thought this movie was very well-paced and had a great, great story with a great leading character.
I would like to know how they shot some of these shots, like that shallow depth of field shot they did where like the background was kind of like in a swirl and just completely out of focus, was like, that looked amazing.
Yeah, they did a lot of that throughout. I really thought that was really cool too. That blur effect was really dope. Every frame was interesting. Because if you watch The Favorite, he uses these really wide lenses to shoot a majority of the film. This one, he brings the wide lenses back, but he also has the effect, like you just said, that sort of circular blur effect behind the character, as well as like the peephole look and like the fisheye lens. So visually, it's crazy from the lens perspective, but also then like the whole staging and set design is.
Yeah, he's been on a roll. I mean, I haven't watched The Favorite, but The Lobster, The Killing of a Sacred Deer, 2015, 2017, The Favorite, 2018, and then Poor Things, 2023. He's just been knocking it out of the ballpark with those types of movies. And The Lobster and the Killing of a Sacred Deer weren't like out there visually like this one was, but this was like a visual trip. And I don't know if Hulu is like gives away in their normal plan like the ultra 4K or whatever like the highest resolution is, but this movie looked amazing on my TV. Like I don't think I've streamed a movie that looked this good. Like there were the scenes when they were on the deck of the ship. Like when you remember when she was like reading and he tried to take her book, and like that looked amazing on my, like it looked so sharp. I don't remember streaming a movie that looked that sharp. So I don't know if Hulu's just streaming movies where other platforms are like making you pay for a higher tier, but this movie looked great. But yeah, whatever lenses they were using to shoot this stuff was...
You might find it interesting that there's Robbie Ryan was the cinematographer, and there's quite a few videos on YouTube of him talking about DPing the movie. So you should probably check it on YouTube. There's about 4 videos that just came up in Google search that are 40 to 47 minutes of people obsessed with cinematography talking about it. So maybe something to get immersed into.
One thing this movie reminded me of was, I don't know if you guys have seen, but early 90s French movie Delicatessen and the City of Lost Children. Those, it immediately reminded me of those two movies, just with like the sets and just like the surrealist kind of approach to this. But those are two movies that automatically my mind went straight to.
Story wise, you know, we'll spoil things a little bit here, but basically Bella Baxter is a creation of a character called Godwin Baxter. And the concept is so cool because she's basically a corpse that Godwin found who was pregnant, and then he Frankensteined her brain, the baby's brain, into the woman's body, and then you get Bella Baxter. I thought it was really interesting. Basically, the film is her journey and her growth and development throughout the couple of years that she's sort of seeing the world. The film opens in black and white when she's basically a baby, and the things that humor her are just like little silly things, like Godwin, his whole like, I don't even know, his whole body is destroyed, but he has to like pass gas through this weird machine, and then a bubble, like a gas
that was so
comes out of his mouth, and she sort of like starts clapping like a little baby. But the movie's also broken down by location. So it's London, Lisbon, a ship, Paris, and then London again. And I read that each one of those locations was like a different stage of her life. So, In London, she's like a baby. In Lisbon, she's an adolescent. She discovers her sexuality. She explores her sexuality and food and different cultures. And then on the ship, she learns, you know, the more realistic side and the dark side of the world, inequality, poverty, hunger, wealth, and how these things are not equal for everyone. When she sees the children dying on that, where they make a stop. And then Paris, she begins to mature and own her sexuality and own herself. And when she goes back to London, she confronts her past as like this hardened, mature woman who's in control of herself. And I thought that transformation in real time was so awesome to see, especially when you see how she walks. You know, she always has that funny walk throughout most of the film, but that last scene in late Paris and London again, you can tell she's very confident in her stride and in the way she speaks. And everyone around her is basically looking up to her instead of looking down at her like they were in the first part of the film. I thought that was really, really cool.
Definitely think it's a must-see.
Yeah, it's a must-see. Visually, it's incredible. I think, obviously, Emma Stone was great. Mark Ruffalo is really good as like this desperate, lovesick, jealous dude who loses his mind. And then one of the funniest things in the movie is... Godwin Baxter, who goes by the name, Emma calls him God, but anytime he references his dad, it's always like this insane trauma torture that his dad instilled on him, like ironing his balls or something like that. Like, he hints at how he became this disfigured Franken monster. It's kind of sad but really funny too.
Yeah, and I thought the casting was great. Everybody played their part really, really well in this movie.
It's on Hulu. Definitely watch it. Any last words on Poor Things?
No, I think that's, we said all that needs to be said, but going from a must watch to it's up to you to watch Spaceman with Adam Sandler.
Yeah, this movie, so I was talking to Scott pre-show. Upon reading that Adam Sandler was going to star in this film, I was excited. When I saw the trailer, I was pretty disappointed and kind of brought back down to earth. But I've been captivated by Adam Sandler's film career as of late, especially, you know, contrasting his deal and his movies for Netflix, and then his work on Uncut Gems and Hustle, for both of which he got recognized. So I feel like he's like this guy that has 90% of his career is like this silly comedy, but he has this like untapped resource. You also saw this in Funny People, which he was great in. And I want access to that. I want to see that. And that's why I wanted to watch this movie. Like, I just want to see what he was going to do here.
It seemed like he wanted a role that was going to challenge him. That it gets kind of old to do comedy after comedy. It wasn't particularly his movie that he was starring in. So I thought I wanted to see it because this is not what I would label as a Adam Sandler film. And most of the time, he was floating. He was, the entire movie, he was only on screen with himself. He was never really on screen with someone else other than just showing them in another location. He was only in the scene by himself.
Yeah, let me just drop the plot real quick if people haven't seen it. So this takes place in like on Earth, but in a science fiction world.
It's kind of like an alternate universe, right? Where where the Czech Republic and Korea seem to be leading the space race.
Yeah. And Adam Sandler's character, it's Jacob, but it's also like Jakob because he's Czech. He's been sent to space. He's been living up there for 6 months to explore this mysterious pink cloud that has been in the sky for about 4 years. So he's up there. He's in constant contact with Earth. And then he encounters this mysterious spider called Hanus. And, you know, that's kind of the setup. So that alone, I was pretty intrigued. And the funny thing, I didn't know much about this movie, but I'm curious how you guys felt about it. Like, how long did it take you guys to feel comfortable with the spider on screen? For me, it was like a 45 minutes in, because I was like, this thing's going to bite him, kill him, do something.
Yeah, that's a good question, because it comes in unexpectedly, and then you don't really know how long it's going to be a part of the movie. But I think after, yeah, like you said, it wasn't immediate, but after, it was a shock at first, but after, I think with me, after a few minutes, like after a few scenes, you're kind of like, damn, this thing is, it's soothing to hear it talk.
It was soothing.
I was kind of like, okay, yeah, this thing is playing an important role, so.
I felt like, I don't know if it was intentional, and I don't know if you noticed this, but it felt like when the creature was first introduced, it looked much larger. It looked bigger. But then, yes, as you slowly were, he was having, you know, as Adam's character got more comfortable with the creature, he got smaller, which made me as the viewer feel more comfortable, because he wasn't this large, you know, space foreign creature.
That's a good point. At different times, I was like, I just thought it was like a different angle that they were showing him, but that makes sense, like you said, because towards the end, when they're outside of the spaceship, you know, in the that purple cloud, it's like, you know, the size of his helmet or something.
I was like, is this just like a oversight of the film? Does it have any significance? But yeah, it is noticeable. especially towards the end. You're like, oh, wait, this little guy, he's a little smaller now. He's not as intimidating. But I think at that point in the film, your fear of the spider kind of has leveled out a little bit. I think this movie is good PR for spiders, because you can trust a spider after all. Just FYI, if you see one in the corner of the ceiling in your bedroom tonight, he might give you some life advice. What did you think of...
Come on, you can't transition from that.
Why? Oh. Just laugh and keep it moving, that's all.
Okay, pretend I didn't say that. You can keep it moving, go ahead.
The movie was really poorly received. And I try to... I didn't look too deeply at this, but...
It's funny, because it was number one on Netflix for like a weekend or something, right?
Yeah, but that's just like people clicking on it, you know? Those aren't... Doesn't signify that people like the movie.
No, of course not. But it at least made its round when people saw it. You know?
Yeah, they probably thought David Spade was the spider and he's going to come out with jokes.
We don't know how Netflix does their analytics. Because you can... millions of people can select something and then go out of it. Or maybe watch a whole or half of a movie or half of a show. It's not known how they justify something being number one.
And this is the type of movie that I bet a lot of people didn't finish it completely. Like, I bet 100%. A lot of people watched like the first 20 minutes, saw it was a slow burn, not what they expected, and just like turned it off after that.
So to that point, why do you think the reviews were so bad? I mean, maybe you think the movie sucks. I don't know. We haven't really talked about it, but.
I can't tell you why the reviews were like that. With me personally, you guys know I'm a fan of sci-fi movies, and one, because it's like one of the only genres that you can really tell like unique stories and just take risks with. But I after the first couple minutes, I already knew what type of movie it was going to be. It was going to be a slow burn. It wasn't going to be anything. It's like the type of movie that you just sit back late night. You don't really have anything to watch. You like sip on some chocolate milk or something and just watch it like after midnight or something. But it felt to me like a movie that was made from like a short. Like this could have been like a 20, 30 minute short film. But it's a full length movie. I thought it was okay. I wasn't a fan of the acting. I didn't think Carey Mulligan and Adam Sandler had any screen chemistry at all. They both felt flat. Her character felt very flat. And honestly, like I don't think Adam Sandler should have been like front and center in this movie, because it's not so much as of an actor driven film, although he is the majority of the time on the screen. I think what Adam Sandler is doing with taking serious roles in recent years is cool, and he's great in some of them, like you said, Uncut Gems, Hustle. But there's some where it's like, you're watching the movie and you're just like, this is Adam Sandler's face like all the time on my screen right now. Like it wasn't working. I felt like I probably would have liked the movie better if it was like two different actors
in it. You thought that you were going through Adam Sandler withdrawal?
No, it was just like, you know, after like 20 minutes, I'm just like, it's Adam Sandler's funny face.
You thought he was completely miscast?
I did so, yeah.
I disagree. I thought he did a really good job, and I think it proves that he can do a good job. He's proven it. He doesn't have to prove it to me, but it's one of those movies that I like, but I wouldn't recommend. And I feel like it's a high concept sci-fi film. It's a very introspective film. You know, it's one of those movies that makes you look within. It's a love story at the end. It's about a guy who, it's about experiencing loneliness and isolation. And we see that obviously he's isolated in space, but he's also isolated from his wife who's back home with his child who wants nothing to do with him at this point because he chose his career to go to space. He chose that over her. And I think it's about, you know, his fear of returning to Earth and not having anybody there waiting for him, like not having his family there waiting for him because he has taken his wife for granted and this relationship with her for granted. And that's kind of how I interpreted the film. Science fiction element, whether the spider is real or a figment of his imagination. You know, I'm not really interested in knowing that.
Yeah, it wasn't an important element to drive the story. Like, is it real? Is it not? It's just the fact that he's self-reflecting.
Yeah.
And you know, understanding and coming to terms with what he's done wrong in his life and how he's done wrong to his wife.
It just felt like the story, there wasn't enough development in the beginning for you to get an understanding of why he was in space,
he was just because of the cloud. That's it.
Oh, I know. But I mean, like what happened before, because then you realize in the story, there was turmoil of, that there was a disagreement of whether or not he should be there. But you found that out later on, which people would probably have more buy-in to the film if it happened in the beginning, because all of a sudden he's in space, everything's fine. All of a sudden it just feels like it turned into a horror movie. It's like, wait, what happened? Like, where did that come from?
There was, I think what Scott, what you're saying, I got that feeling too. Like, there was a lack of empathy towards this guy later on in the movie, just because, you know, you didn't really build any feelings for these characters to kind of like be sad about what's happening to them.
But I do, to your point, I do agree this could have been a short film, a really tight short film. I think it's a film that requires a lot of patience, and it's certainly not for everybody. And I understand, I'm still curious why audiences didn't like the movie, general audiences. I'm curious to go and learn why critics didn't like the film. But maybe it points to that, just a lack of emotional connection to the characters. Because I did feel, yeah, maybe my curiosity about the film was less about the relationship between Adam Sandler and Lenka, his wife in the film, and more about Adam Sandler and the spider, which is not where you want your audience to go. You want the focus to be on the relationship. That's the core of the film. That's the heart of the film, and maybe it was missing that a little bit. But again, it's my kind of film. I liked it, but I personally would probably not recommend it to most people. It does take patience.
It's also based on a book. So the from what I read, the ending was different from the book.
I was just gonna say how like this would be a good read as a book.
That's because it was a book. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Was it a good book?
I don't know. It must have been good enough for them to make a film based on the book. So.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have greenlit it.
I was into it, and it's one of those movies. I was into it because I needed that kind of movie at that specific time. You know, I may otherwise not ever have seen it, but I'm glad I did.
Yeah, I like foreign sci-fi movies because it's a different take on reality. And again, I thought it was cool that, you know, it took place in the Czech Republic. I thought it was cool that the look of it had like this vintage kind of like 70s sepia-toned look. You kind of couldn't tell what era they were in until the very end when his wife is, like, talking to him on the cell phone in her car. Because even the car she was driving was, like, older, and, like, the technology was older in the space station when they were communicating with him. Everything seemed vintage, so I thought it was cool to like, mix up that time period and stuff.
Yeah, they kept it vague. Even where the wife, you know, most of the film were in space, we're in his shuttle, but when we're with his wife, she's out in a remote location, so we don't really see what life is like on Earth. So the movie, in that sense, feels small, even though the scale is the idea is so big. But yeah, it's interesting. I recommend it, kind of half-heartedly. It's a curious watch. If you're not going to get the goofy Adam Sandler, there's no humor at all in this movie, I don't think.
I didn't catch like one funny moment. Well, when the spider got like found out about what was that, chocolate or something.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. There's that. What was that? Like Nutella? And then it sneezed.
It was some sort of Nutella, yeah.
It sneezed on his helmet when he kind of put that like extraction. He turned on that like Terminator. What is it called? Bomba? He dropped a Bomba on that. That was weird, right? So this is another element of the film that I thought was strange. It was the product placement. Bomba was a sponsor of the mission that he was on. So when he needed to actually shut down the ship in order to use the Bomba, he had to read a little like mini advertisement. So it had like this layer, this additional layer of, I don't know. That kind of told you a little bit about the society, but not much. So it was just strange.
If you don't mind slow burn movies with very little action and a lot of like thought to it, then this is probably your movie.
And a big spider who gets smaller. but yeah, we'll leave it there. I still haven't finished Sopranos. I literally binged the whole thing in like 3 weeks and I'm down to the final episode and I can't watch it. I don't know why. I don't want to say goodbye. Maybe I'll try again this week.
Don't stop believing. You can get through it.
Anything else you guys watching in the weeks ahead?
I'm going to watch Oppenheimer since I haven't watched that, and that's on Peacock now. So that's, you know, after the Oscars, I got to watch that. So I'll leave it at that.
I consume myself the other day watching the Wendy Williams documentary. It feels as real as it seems. And
that's on my list too.
It's sad, but you give it a watch. It really gives a perspective of what happened with her show changing.
Yeah, we'll save that. We'll save that maybe for the next one. I started watching Shogun, so I'm going to continue watching that. And that's all. We'll leave it there, guys. Thanks for checking in. Like, subscribe, listen, play. Peace. Ow.